Shalom everyone, and today we're studying Parashat Ki Tetzeh, the book of Numbers, chapter 21, verse 10. Now, the words are Ki Tetzeh, that's the beginning of the verse, saying, as you go for war on your enemies. And then it continues, and God will, the Lord God is going to give you in your hand, and you will take his spoils. So we started to talk about it last week. Remember Parashat Shoftim, last week's parasha, Parashat Ketetzeh, that's the beginning of the hunting season, which means we are talking about the month of Elul, and we have to wage war against our evil inclination. That's a hunting season. As much as we're going to get, correct, transform, overcome during this month and the holidays season, then that's going to upgrade the year we are going to experience as a new year, not a recycled year with the same old, let's say, problems. Beyond problems, it's not just about problems, it's more about challenges. It's like, you know, if you find yourself dealing with same challenges again and again, it's like, you took a course, you take a test, you fail the test. That's why you have to go a second time and a third time and a fourth time till you pass the test. You know, going through the test is okay as long as you score the first, second time. But if it goes on third, fourth, fifth, we are in a kind of a trouble. So let us say, remember, so when you're going for war, we have that expression, going for war, in Parashat Shoftim, last week's parasha, and in this one. And it's a very important, there's a very important understanding that the Torah is not talking only on a superficial level about going for war against, the Israelite nation is coming to its promised land. And then what do you do when you go for war against your enemies? Okay? Because the way the grammatical structure of the sentence in Hebrew is not allowing that too much. And I'll explain. Because it says, Ki tetzeh lamilchama, as you go for war. And then, but it doesn't say that. It says, La milchama, for the war. And the Ohr HaChaim HaKadosh, Rabbi Chaim Ben Attal, 17th century, he says, why does it say, La milchama, to the war? It doesn't say, a war. You know, it happened to be that you're going to have to fight against the Edomites or the Canaanite, and one of the Canaanite nations, maybe against the Ammonites, maybe above the Amorites, but no, it says the war. And there's only one war, which is the war. That's a war against the evil inclination. Because other wars, they are, it's a kind of a, happen to be that you have a war, but when we are talking about the war, there's only one war, which overrules all other wars, which is the real war, which is the war against the evil inclination. That's why it says, over your enemies. And I explained it before many, many times. We think we have a lot of enemies. You know, what are my enemies? So we all have weaknesses, right? Some of them, I can't say no. Some of them, I'm too judgmental. Some of them, addictions. So we all addicted to either sugar, gluten, of course, screens. There's so many addictions. We're addicted to our safe zone. We're addicted to adventures. We have a lot of addictions. How do I know it is an addiction? It's a simple explanation you can find online in psychology. An addiction is something that drains you out of energy, and in a in simple language, hi and bye. You enjoy a lot for a very short time, and then you have payment time. You feel down. You know, the more addicted a person is, the more depressed the person is, the less energized the person is, the more procrastinating the person is. So, you know, that's very simple. So, who is your real enemy? The Torah says very clearly, Un etano, and God will give him. When you go to and you wage a war against your enemies, and you think, my enemy is, let's say, food, let's say shopping, let's say my enemy is alcohol, let's say this is computer games. You know, we all have a lot of enemies. And then the Zohar says, no, there's only one enemy. And the enemy is the evil inclination. And then God will give him in your hands. And then you take his spoils. And I explained it many, many times. What do you mean to take his spoils? It says, should say, Veshavita mimeno shevi. And you will take from him spoils. But it doesn't say so. We said, Veshavita shivyo, and you will take his captives, which means what's the captive? Verse 11, Veraita bashivya eshet, and you will see in captivity a beautiful woman. Who is the beautiful woman? Your soul. Your soul was captive in captivity in the hands of your enemy, the evil inclination. What does it mean? We'll give a lot, you know, we'll give a very simple explanation. Today, with our new a civilization of tolerating whatever. If you feel good about it, it's probably okay, and we should all tolerate it. Even, but I have this feeling that I need to steal, okay, other people's stuff, okay? So society, there are some inclination, leave them alone. Leave them alone, and therefore we see that, let's say in the big American cities, a lot of department stores are closed because the police allows you to steal. You know, you can come and steal something, you know, $100 worth, 200, 500, maybe 1,000, up to 1,000. That's okay. We should tolerate it. Why? The person, he loves to steal. You cannot take his hobby away from him. I hope you understand. It's a general. What I'm saying is that we tolerate stuff that, let's say, oh, somebody is very, very, a person is very uncomfortable to his surrounding. He's throwing trash on the street. He's doing graffiti, or, you know, in a place that's supposed to be pleasant for people to walk by. And you know, many cities, it's kind of a policy to tolerate it, which means, you know, you feel like making graffiti in the middle of town in a very, let's say, respectable place, and you can paint on a wall that somebody worked really hard to design that wall with high quality materials that will last for a long time. So it's going to look fresh and neat and clean for many, many decades. And now you go and you paint on it. And the moment you paint on it, somebody else comes and says, why only him? I can paint on it also. And in a very, very short time, it looks like horrible. There's no, it's not clean and it's not so. But people have the need. We should allow them. And the problem is very, very simple. What we just said, when we say, and you will take his captive, a beautiful woman, which means your beautiful soul. And we have to realize what we started to explain last week. When you go to war against your evil inclination and you realize he is big as a horse, he's much bigger, much more powerful. And you should not give up that war, because if you give up that war and you say, okay, let's tolerate what? I have a need to destroy public space. Why? I can't stand when it is clean and things are nice. I can't stand it. I have to destroy it. Now, if that's a person's inner need, and there are many people like this, okay, we should accommodate it. And the question is like this: whose need is it to have anger against society in such a way that you go on and you have a need to simply make an environment that a lot of people paid a lot of money to make it look in a high level so it's going to be pleasant and people are going to hang out over there when they had a hard, long working day, or they came from far away for a vacation and they want to travel, let's say, on Fifth Avenue, Champs-Élysées or let's say Champs-Élysées in Paris. And you come to these places and everything looks so horrible and dirty, you don't feel you are on a vacation. You don't feel you came out somehow to relax because that's not a relaxing atmosphere. But, people have the need to destroy, to put their mark on it, to write on it, or maybe even to do a lot of stuff. They're angry, and you have to accommodate their anger because it's their genuine, authentic anger. No, it's not. Never. Why? Because when it says over here, and you after you win against your enemy, the evil inclination, and you find in captivity, who do you find? This beautiful woman, your beautiful, beautiful soul. And we have to remember, we have, as human beings, we have two parts. One part is that beautiful woman. That part is the soul. It is beautiful because a long history, beauty was always described as something that is neat, that is symmetrical, that is created with harmony, not with cacophony. Okay? So when we explain beauty, what a beauty is a place is like we know in Hebrew, beauty, the word beauty in English, beauty is a translation of the Hebrew word tiferet. Tiferet, I'm talking about the names of the sefirot. Tiferet is a central column. What does it mean central column? When you feel balance, when you feel symmetry, when you feel harmony, when you feel at peace. And when you feel there's a synthesis, okay, not disharmony. The human soul is godly. The human soul is being called as nitzotz eloka. It's a godly spark. It's a spark from God. And Rabbi Ashlag, the founder of the modern Kabbalistic movement, explains. What's the difference between, it's an old Kabbalistic saying, what's the difference between the human soul and God? And the answer is, it's like a stone and the mountain. The all difference is that the mountain is the whole and the stone is only a part. So the question is, what severs the stone from the mountain? On the physical level, this is the axe. On the spiritual level, what severs the human soul from the mountain, from God? The evil inclination. Which means when I'm working hard enough to remove the evil inclination, then I can return the stone to the mountain. That return is called teshuva, wrongly translated into repentance. The word in Hebrew, teshuva, means to return. Teshuv means to return. The Zohar explains that teshuva is like teshuv hay, the hay, which is the vessel, the shechina, the soul, which is the vessel for God's light. When we return the connection back to the whole, to God, we will feel finally at ease. We will finally feel peace. Okay? Peace, or in Hebrew, shalom. Shalom is a bigger idea than peace. Shalom means complete. We will only feel complete when we are back to being one with our source. Okay? Now, but the body consciousness and the evil inclination that rides on top of the body consciousness, and I spoke about it last week, it is Rechev that is mentioned in Parashat Shoftim, the chariot, or it's coming from the French word charette, composition. When you have a composition of the body with its limitations and needs and drives with the evil inclination, then together it's a composition, charette, of all of this together, and together with all the negative angels we created last year, previous years, past lives, and we did not transform them yet. All of that composition of all of these negative forces, they are our true real enemy. Now let's go back. So let's say let's say I am an oppressed minority. Let's say even more, I'm oppressed indigenous minority. Okay? And therefore I'm entitled to be angry. There's no holy anger. No, it doesn't. What does it mean? If I'm angry, it is because I'm allowing my dark side to take over. Because, well, you have to, but you have to connect to the anger. You have to connect to the pain. Yes, but always as understanding that this is not your authentic you. Why? But that's an authentic anger. No, it's not. No, it is not. I was raised in a family that whoever most of the people in my near close family, which means my parents, my mother's siblings, their cousins, all of them went through the Holocaust. They were an oppressed minority. They were in concentration camps. They somehow survived 6 years of the Holocaust. And they had a terrible, terrible, and most of them were in their teens during these 6 years from 1939 till 1945. They were not angry people. They had to choose being angry and hateful against their oppressors, the Nazis or the Germans, or to have a life. And somehow they realized that being angry, as they said, being hateful will become them. And we don't want to be them. So we will focus on being happy, being loving, being everything that the Nazis were not. That will be our revenge. And that's why all of them were more or less successful people. They established homes, they created their own careers, they raised kids, they were functional people in their community. Why? Because they had to make that choice. Being an angry, doesn't matter what, doesn't give you an entitlement, because the story is very, very simple. I can re repeat that many, many times. Just think about it really, really thoroughly. Contemplate on it. You have a good night's sleep. You wake up not too early. You slept enough. Okay? It was a comfortable sleep. And you woke up and you feel good. Okay? You feel that you are okay. You're comfortable. You're okay. Okay, a normal human being that wakes up like this and immediately thinks, I can't wait to hate somebody, this is not normal. Why? Because when a person is in harmony with himself and his environment, he's not angry, he's not upset. So being authentic cannot be angry, hateful, and authentic. This is an oxymoron. Being connecting to your own soul, it's like you can't have both angry and connected to your soul. No, this is the dark side and this is the light side. The soul is the light side, and the more you connected to your authentic soul, it means that the more you connected back to God, the less angry you are, the more loving you are. And we repeated it many, many times. That idea that Rabbi Ashlag repeats many times, Ein noten ma she'en bo. You cannot give what you don't have. Which means, if you're busy inflicting pain on other people, and you know what? Let's say they hurt you, and you want to take vengeance, you want to take revenge. Okay? So the Torah says, we read it in Parashat Kedoshim. Chapter 19, do not take revenge, do not keep vengeance. Okay, somebody comes to kill you, you get up and you kill him before he kills you. You have to protect your life, but not out of anger. Just because you care about your life, about your family, about your community, about your country, and you can't let hateful people that covet what you've got, you can't let them just because they want it, you can't give it to them. No, it doesn't work this way. The world cannot exist when this is allowed. Because if a person behaves like this, he's not connected to his true self. He is connected to the dark side. The dark side, you know, you cannot give what you don't have. So if you have the dark side and you allow the dark side to take over, what does that mean? You'd like everybody else to suffer like you do. So you're going to do everything possible that the ugliness that you somehow allow to develop inside yourself without taking the responsibility to overcome it, then you'd like everybody else to live in the same hellhole that you became because you allowed it. There's free will. And somehow God allows us, the Creator allows us, you want it, you get what you want. Till you suffer enough, then you say, I had enough. Which means I'm not going to be anybody's victim anymore. I'm not going to be anybody's, what should I say? Topic for persecution and so on. I'm not focusing on that. I'm focusing about the person I would like to become. We'll develop that more, the idea, and that in the beginning of the Zohar of this parasha, because the Zohar of this parasha is starting from another story. Basically, there are many, many rules in this parasha. And that begins in chapter 22 in Deuteronomy, verse 13. And on the surface, it speaks about when a man takes a woman, comes to her, which means they get married, and he hates her. And then he frames her that she and he's giving her a bad name. Like she was not a virgin when they got married. Okay? He hates her. Now there's a whole process to check it out if he framed there, or it was, or if this is a true kind of a story. If they find out that the husband was framing his wife, simply bed-mouthing her, and that was a blood libel or something like this, then it said he should be punished. And the verse is like this, Deuteronomy 22, verse 19. Ve'anshu oto me'a kesef, and he should be punished. And he should be punished, the husband. 100 silver coins, and they should give the father of the girl the 100 silver coins. Why? Ki hotzi shem ra, because he gave a bad name, al betulat Yisrael, above or to on the Virgin of Israel. Now, betulat Yisrael, if you don't know Hebrew, you'll have, I don't know if it's being translated, there are so many translations from of the Torah into many, many languages. I think just in English we have close to 100 official translations. But the word Betulat Israel, whoever speaks Hebrew fluently, is basically the Shekhinah. Betulat Israel, because it doesn't say Betulah Be Israel, Betulah Israel, he gave a bad name to a virgin from the nation of Israel. That's not what it says. It says Betulat Israel. He gave a bad name to the Shekhinah. So how the Zohar is explaining that, because if you want just to understand it as a single issue about a man marrying a woman, and then he frames her because he doesn't like her, and he thinks he was framed, he was betrayed, that he didn't make a good deal, because it's the girl that he married, he thought she is a better cook, that she's more beautiful and whatever. He had an idea. Then he feels that he was a kind of cheated by the father of the girl, and therefore he's trying to get out of that marriage. Okay, so he's framing her, and he's giving her bad name. That's one thing. Okay, but if you read carefully the words, it cannot be the whole story, because it, as I said, it doesn't say Betulam Yisrael, a virgin. And a virgin from the nation of Israel. Betulat Israel means, by all means, the Shekhinah. Okay? And also, we know that the sign of Elul is Betulah Virgo, the virgin. Okay? So there's a specific word, Betulah, virgin, which means a complete vessel. And when it comes with the word with Israel together, we're talking about the Shekhinah. We're not talking about one girl. Okay? So the Zohar is giving us an amazing explanation of what does it mean. And he's speaking, the Zohar is saying as follows. Pikudah da ladun bedin motzi shamra. So it's a mitzvah to judge whoever is bed-mouthing. But that's what the Zohar is saying. The Zohar doesn't say to whoever is bed-mouthing his bride. It says bed-mouthing. Hadaudichti Rabbanan. So the and yeah, it's related to that idea of the groom who feels that he is betrayed. But then the Zohar says, but we're talking a much bigger idea. Velav kol shem rashakul. Not every bed naming is exactly the same. There are all kinds of bed naming, naming bed, giving bad name to someone. For instance, the meraglim da pikushum bishal ara itanshu begina. For instance, the spies came back from touring the country for 40 days, okay, the land of Israel, and they badmouthed the land of Israel. They were punished for that. They died because of that almost the same day. Umitu v'la zachula. They died and they never entered the promised land. Ve'iteta karka ibara. And the same way bad mouthing the land is bad mouthing your wife. Which means, let us explain something. You know, a lot of people, I lived in many, many cities in Israel, North America, and people ask me many times, okay, where is the best place you ever lived in? And I said, look, I learned one thing. Wherever you live, this is the best place ever. Why? If God sent you to live in a certain place, this is the best place. And if you choose another thing, either a place that you've been for before, then you live in the past and you miss your present. And if you think that it's going to be the best living somewhere else, you live in the future, but you don't live in the present. What can we do? You are in the present. And you are in the present because your tikkun is in the present. And where did God put you to live? This is the best for now. Where are you right now? In the best location. Why it's the best location? Because the light and the pleasure and the challenge and the tikkun and everything you dream on is where you are. The moment you're saying, I'm in the wrong place, in the wrong position, with the wrong woman, and that, you know, you can continue that in the wrong relationships, you are bad-mouthing the Shekhinah. You're bad-mouthing the promised land. Wherever land you are at the moment is your promised land. Why? If God allowed you to be in that place with that spouse, in that job, that's a place. We learned that about Joseph. He dreamt about being a king. Meanwhile, he's being sold by his brothers. And he finds yourself a Hebrew slave at the household of Potiphar in Egypt. Well, the Egyptians, they hated the Hebrews. They were very, very racist. Whoever was not Egyptian was not even human. So you can imagine that Joseph as a slave, Hebrew slave in an Egyptian household, he was not really spoiled, right? He was treated as the scum of the earth. Okay? And what happened? Whatever he did it so well, with so much love and excitement, because otherwise we cannot explain how his master, his owner, his boss, Potiphar, saw that whatever he's touching, God is making it successful. The only way that that can happen is when you do something with excitement, with focus, and you're present. Why are you present? Because if that's where God wants me to be, that's the place I'm supposed to be. And if I want to be successful, God is saying, okay, let us see how successful you are wherever you are. You never say, you know, I'm the janitor, and I'm, you know, that's not my job. I'm really supposed to be the king. I'm supposed to be the emperor. I'm supposed to be the president. Okay? I'm supposed to be the person, the most famous, powerful, respected person. And until you give me that, my job, I'm not going to do this lousy job you're giving me. I'm sitting here waiting till you give me my really job that comes to me, that I'm entitled to. Never happens this way. You have to be like Joseph, you never, what does it mean? The moment you're starting to complain and feel like a victim, There's a problem. You do not appreciate the opportunity the Creator gave you. So what are you doing? You are bad-mouthing the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is wherever you are. Because why did God put you in that place, that condition, that job, that physical coordinates, like location on earth? Because the Shekhinah you're looking for is right here. This is where you have to wage war against your enemy, your evil inclination. So that could be laziness, it could be everything. And you know what? Those people who climb up from the bottom, somehow they are more capable. And why did they climb up from the bottom? Because they never thought that they're being cursed or victimized. Because when you're a victim, you wait to somebody to make you a king. No country can be given on a silver platter. You want to be an independent nation? You have to fight for it. You have to fight an honest fight. Yeah, you can in fight is like in a fight, but you have to fight, which means you have to put everything you've got because there are no free lunches. And victims, you're just playing a victim, you can't get it. You can't, a victim will never be able to have a true ownership. So when we are saying, when you are full of complaints about everything, you're not complaining about your wife, you're not complaining about your husband, you're not complaining about the structure of your nose, you don't complain about the fact that you were born to a low income class. Okay? You're not complaining about that. You're complaining about the Shekhinah. You have a complaint exactly against the Creator himself. And because of that, as long because you'll never be able to merit the promised land. Could be you are supposed to be the president. Could be you are supposed to live in the most amazing city, state, country, whatever. But you were born in a different place. Why? You're born because you have to earn it. You have to make the journey. And you have to make the journey with pride, with ownership, and with appreciation that every challenge that God gives you on the way, you have to appreciate the challenge, the hardship. And many times the persecutions and the whatever hardships you've gone the way, because this is how diamonds are being generated under a lot of pressure, a lot of heat, and then coal, which is not the symbol of beauty, would become a diamond. Coal and diamond, they're made from the same thing, carbon. Okay, what's the difference? The pressure, the heat. When a person goes through the pressure and the heat, and he has true faith that everything is for the good, and he never complains, he's simply stepping up to the plate and taking responsibility for whatever he or she experiences, which means, yeah, we human beings, we can feel bitter, we can feel stepped on, we can feel discriminated for justice, not for justice, it doesn't matter. What do I do with that feeling and emotion? Looking at that emotion, realizing this is my enemy. Against this enemy, I'm here to fight. And how do I fight the enemy? By simply having an appreciation, as we learned in the previous parashot, shut down the negativity. Stop it like a stop sign. Stop, come to a full stop. Everything is for the good, and therefore, I believe it's all, and I have total faith, complete faith, and trust, and resilience, and hope, and optimism. that everything will come out right as long as I stick to the vision that whatever I'm going through is just there to lift me up to the right place. And when you have that kind of vision, that kind of faith that you do not allow yourself to badmouth Betulat Yisrael, badmouth the Shekhinah, badmouth the situation. No, the situation is right. Okay? My attitude is the one that has to be transformed. How do I transform the attitude? I have to fight the enemy. How do you fight darkness? By shutting all these emotions that belong to darkness, which means I don't believe my anger. My anger says I'm authentic, true anger. Connect to the true anger inside yourself. It's so powerful. No, that's evil inclination. That's not authentic, your authentic soul. A complete, successful, authentic soul is not angry. Anger is darkness. Anger is lack of light. You cannot authentic make it give it authenticity. Yeah, you cannot ignore the fact that you're angry, but why are you angry? Because you are bad-mouthing the situation. So therefore, I think there's some. Just Orach Chaim HaKadosh, Rabbi Chaim Ben Attar again, about this issue. And so the person feels that he is going through suffering. I don't remember stealing from anyone. Why I was just cheated and lost so much money? Okay? Why do I have to go through so much disgrace and like, stuff like this? And the answer is, he's saying it's like you have to remember who created that. Your enemy, the enemy within you. He created, because the moment you believe him, the moment you just let yourself follow the anger, the hatred, okay, the feeling of victimization and stuff like this, the feeling that there's injustice. Yes, there is injustice, of course. But if you're going to be gone complaining, we know research is showing complainers, haters, all of these kind of people, they just become sour, but they can never achieve a true and lasting success. I'm talking about business-wise. I'm talking about family, a community. It doesn't work, not for the long term. It doesn't work. The people who are successful are the people that see the problem, see the hatred, see the abuse, see the injustice, and say, I've seen it, but I choose not to be bitter. I choose to be enlightened. I'm choosing to embrace God, to embrace faith, to embrace that faith that says everything is for the good. Why? The only way you can connect to the eternal light of the Creator is by believing in good. And when you do have that faith and you do have it strong enough, so strong that it's like etched in stone and no one can take it away from you, that's called having a strong character. That's called bitachon, which means Bitachon means no one can come. You know, we are being brainwashed by the media, by friends, family. Now everything is so bad. Let us all complain. You know, even Job's wife said, you know, give me a break. Curse God and die already. Look what happened to you. And Job is saying, you're horrible. How could you talk? When we were rich and so successful, you had no problem with God. Now that's what happened. Okay, so you this I don't know why it happened. I'm not going to curse God. Everything is for the good. You want to connect to the light that is good, and God saw that the light was good. The Zohar says everything good comes from the light. So whatever, if the light is everywhere, whatever we go through, we have to find the good because we have no other choice. Okay, listening to the evil inclination. And that can come out as a friend saying, look what happened to you. That's horrible. No, everything is for the good. And if you do stick to that, you always can turn the bitterness into sweet. Samson, with his riddle to the Philistines of Gaza, and he said, you know, how could the strong one become sweet? And you know, that was a lion that attacked him. And then he killed the lion and the beehive. He found the beehive in the corpse of the lion. So that's how the strong one, the lion, became a place he can take honey from. Okay? Look at it. The trouble became a place he can take honey from. And that's exactly the attitude we should develop because a new year is coming. And as we come to the new year, there's a blessing that we say, Tichle shana vekilolotea, tachel shana vebirchotea. A year with its curses will come to its end, to its demise. And a year with its blessing would just start. Which means when we come into the new year, God, the eternal light, is giving us a perfect year full of light, pleasure, greatness, and fulfillment. The problem is, I have to let go of my grievances, my bad mouthing. I have to let go of them. I have to go through all the last year and to see all of those grievances and to do teshuva. What does it mean, teshuva? To return to the light. And how do I return to the light? When I realize that whatever happened to me, although in the moment it looked like a curse, it looked like a stumbling block, it looked like injustice, it was just an opportunity for me to rise, to correct myself, to improve myself. And then when I see that everything was for the good, and I'm coming to the new year without any grievances, without any bad mouthing, you know, because you know, when you blame bad people, when you blame bad condition, when you blame, you know, you never, we have a whole lot, list of, you know, blaming when you want to blame. There's a whole list that you can find. It's very easy. Okay? When you let go of that list and you leave it behind and you realize everything was for the good, and I trust the Creator. Because whatever opportunity he gave me, you know, a spouse that is not in my liking, or a place of living, or a job, whatever, I didn't really like it. No, I appreciate as an opportunity to get better and higher and light and more into the light. When you do that, that's called teshuvah me'ahava. That's called teshuvah out of love. And this kind of teshuvah turns even all my mistakes, my most horrible mistakes, into great successes. And that's what these days are about. And the Zohar continues basically saying that, you know, we have to understand where it says, Tzadik v'ra lo, rasha v'tov lo. A righteous person, and there's a saying, why do bad things happen to good people? The Hebrew original verse is, there's a righteous person that is always experiencing bad stuff, and a wicked person that, you know, everything is good for him. But that's a very hard thing to translate from Hebrew. Again, if you don't translate it exactly according to the Hebrew grammar, you miss the point. So it becomes like, you know, a wishful translation. So the Zohar says, verse 13 in the Zohar Parashat Ki Tetzeh. Mishu tzaddik v'ra lo. When somebody is a tzaddik, but he's experiencing a lot of mishaps, a lot of evil, a lot of troubles. Dainu zeh shu me'etz hadat tov v'ra. Kevan shera nimtza etzmo. It means he is from the tree of knowledge, good and evil. Since that evil is associated with him, en tzaddik asher lo yachta bara zeh. So you could be a righteous person, but you fall. And it says, en tzaddik sheyaseh tov velo yachta. There's no righteous person who's totally, completely perfect. Whoever is totally, completely perfect has no place on this earth. He has to go to heaven, right? We're here to correct. But since the evil is associating with us, it dwelling with us, so you fall. However, if you are a tzaddik, who is a tzaddik, that will fall and will get up again, which means you don't stay there miserable in the fall, you just get up. So the tzaddik is the righteous person is the one who falls but gets up all over again. Why? He doesn't believe in the virtue of being a victim. He's always finding what's good. And what about the evil person, where it says rasha v'tov lo? That's an evil person. He's only good. And that means when the evil inclination overcame the good inclination. So the righteous person is the one who overcame. Yes, he did not eliminate the dark side, but he's always controlling it. So yes, he falls, he makes a mistake. His reaction is always with grace. Okay, we fell, we made a mistake, let's get up, let's deal with it. Let's hope, let's have the certainty we're going to make it once, twice, three times. You know, King Solomon says seven times, you fall and you get up. That's a tzaddik. Because you have bitachon. You have certainty that all of that is just a test so you can earn your soul. You can earn your victory. Well, when we are talking about the bad person, the rasha, rasha is in issues of ratzon shel atzmo. Selfish person is why it says the tov lo, that he has the good. It's because the evil inclination because his evil inclination took over the good inclination, and that's why it says v'tov lo. He is now controlling the good side. He's evil because he doesn't care anymore. He has no conscience anymore. Why? Because the evil side took over. Now the conscience or the good side is not, you know, he's not even you don't listen to him anymore. Sha'atov tachat reshuto shel harasha, because this evil person controls the good inside him without letting it talk. U'mishum sha'ra sholet al hatov u'rasha. So what's the definition of an evil person? That he has a holy good soul, but he suffocates it, doesn't allow it to express. When he feels the urge to behave to others with grace and appreciation, he immediately puts it aside. No, I can't. You can't be good. You always scare people. You always take the opportunity. Someone is nice, that means he's weak. What does it mean? We have a victim over here. Let's victimize him. Let's take what he's got. Ki mishe nitgaber, whoever overcomes, he takes the name. So if you overcome the good, so you're an evil. You overcome the evil, you're the good. But after a while, when somebody is evil And then he what's left? Only evil. Then he feels it bad. That's the other side. That's a dark side. Veralo, he will suffer. He's connected to death. He's connected to what we call idol worshiping. Anger, by the way, is idol worshiping. All of those emotions in the family of anger is idol worshiping. Idol worshiping. Why? You hand over your holy soul to the dark side. You think you're right and you're addicted to it. That's idol worshiping. You're not in control whatsoever. So, therefore, when Abram started the journey, which is to always fight on the side of the soul, on the side of the good inclination, which means that always the chesed, the grace, will take over the judgment, the hatred. You're not a victim, but you stand on your own. You put boundaries on one end, but you always overcome judgment with grace, and you stay firm on your position. And therefore, Abram, he is the one who redeemed the Shekhinah, Betulat Israel, by not complaining, but always finding the way to be thankful and to overcome the negativity with grace and love and kindness. Verse 17. And that's why, because Abraham gave grace to the Shekhinah, because when he gave space for that kind of a vessel to be there, he basically gave space for God's light to shine. He gave space for the Shekhinah to shine in our physical world. Godliness, holiness can be revealed only when we humans step up to the plate, take responsibility, overcome negativity against all odds, and make God the king of the universe, in our universe, in our reality. Only when we do that, the Zohar says, God will be the king of the universe. Look, let's be honest. Most people don't think. Most people don't even realize they have any power. When there is enough people, like a critical mass of people, that respect God, respect His creation, respect the Torah, and wherever they go, you feel God is their king. So that idea will take over, and that's what the Zohar is saying. The whole world will see that God is the king. And when the whole world sees that God is the king, who will dare to commit any atrocities? Who will dare to abuse the rights of people weaker than them? Who will dare to corrupt and steal? Whatever. That's what the story is about. So, because Abram did it by himself alone against the whole of humanity, he did it alone by doing grace with the Shekhinah, by not complaining. Look, Abram had an amazing career in Ur. And for the faith of God, he gave it all up and became a shepherd. He didn't complain ever that he had to become a shepherd in a day, in an age that most people retire and enjoy their savings. So when the sons of Abram, says as well, verse 17 again, that when they were in custody in Egypt, because of the sins of their previous generations, which means the children of Israel, says Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Arizal, were reincarnation of the generation of the flood, Noah's generation. They had a lot of things, because that's why when it was the same, also the same souls that built the Tower of Babel. So as a punishment for the Tower of Babel, they had to build brick cities for Egypt. For the sin of the flood of Noah, the male-born had to be thrown into the Nile because they didn't finish with the tikkun of their souls yet. However, thanks to Abram, who was their father, forefather, they were saved. And that's why when God said to Moses, he says, go to Egypt and do grace to whoever did grace with you. Now I'm going to make you responsible for Betulat Israel, for the Shekhinah. By taking the Israelites out of Egypt, you basically redeemed the Shekhinah. To raise her, to raise the kala, the bride, how? With good attributes. Which are the good attributes? The 13 attributes that Moses brought down to the nation of Israel. What do we do during the Selichot till Yom Kippur? 13 attributes again and again and again. But what are the 13 attributes? First of all, they are being hinted with the three words. When you find it in the in one of the prayers in Hoshana Rabbah, but here there's another that the Zohar is saying, you can find in the 72 names of God. Remember, 72 is also the name, the number of Chesed, grace, loving kindness. Okay, that's 72. So there are three names in the 72 names: Vaho, Ani, Vaho. Vaho is the first one on the top right. Ani is the middle one. Okay, it's number 37. Vaho is the third from the bottom, first from the right. So you have there Ani, Vaho, Ani, Vaho. This is a hint for the 13 attributes because when you take Vaho, Ani, Vaho, these three names, when you meditate on them, the initials Vav, Aleph, Vav. Vav, Aleph, Vav, you read it as Vav. And first of Vav is the letter Vav. Vav is also 13. Vav is 6. Aleph is 1. Vav is 6. So 6 plus 1 plus 6, that's the initials of Vaho, Ani, Vaho. That's 13, the 13 attributes. That these are, this is the chesed, Vaho, Ani, Vaho. This is the chesed that Abraham overcame the 72 nations. Who are the 72 nations? These are 70 nations plus Esav plus Ishmael. Together, 72, which means that the general name. When you're facing all the negativity of 72 nations, which means the external aspect of the creation, whatever is unjust and whatever is negative, and then with your bride, which is the Shekhinah, you have the Segula, 72 names. Again, either you use Vaho Ani Vaho. You can use all 72 names as a meditation, like meditating on each name. How? You know, Vav, Hey, Vav. You know, you just say the names of the letters. Do not try to pronounce the letters. Hear it. We know Vaho, Ani, Vaho. We know how to pronounce them. We don't know with the rest of them. So don't pronounce. Just pronouncing the names of the letters. But when you just do meditation, you just meditate and then you start saying the names of the letters of all 72 names. That's getting the power of chesed, of grace, to overcome all negativities. You need a lot of patience for that. And then you can achieve victory. When you have grace, you can achieve victory because you're nobody's victim. You're connecting to the infinite light of the Creator. You did teshuva. You reconnected to God. When you reconnect to God, you reconnect to what? the source of all the greatest ideas. You become very resourceful. You become very powerful, the source of all power. Then you would know how to overcome every state of trouble and turn the trouble into an opportunity. So the Zohar continues about that idea, but I think we somehow got the idea of this parasha in general, which means you want to be prepared for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We have to do teshuvah. We have to go through all what happened to us, all what we experienced, and to find those places we still, through meditation, we're still in grievance, we're still blaming, we're still feeling abused, we still feel discriminated, injustice, whatever, and find a way to appreciate the opportunity God gave us and find the light in each situation. When we do that, that's the greatest teshuvah, because when we return to that place, from there, everything looks with grace as an opportunity, as greatness, as growth, as a payment. A payment, some payments you enjoy to pay. You enjoy paying in order to achieve greatness. So you work hard to get a better job. You work hard to earn money so you can buy a better house, you can enjoy living in. You're not suffering paying the price. But when you know the goal, when you focus on the goal, when you focus on that there is grace everywhere all the time. That is the greatest teshuvah, and that's our job for the coming weeks till the end of till Simchat Torah. Thank you, and a lot of success to all of us so we can create a year that is much better than the one before.